he has spoken on the topics faith, family and freedom in Cuba, Belgium, Brazil, Congo, UK and all over the USA to crowds from 14 to 40,000. International leadership speaker, trainer and coach. Author of Learn to Raw Leadership, Attitude Hack, Live a More Excellent Life, 5 Battle Strategies of a Victorious Warrior. 2021 President's Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. Founding partner of the John Maxwell Team. Toastmaster International Speech Competition semi-finalist. Founder of Tell It Like It Is TV, ThatGuyRocks.com and ThatGuySpeaks.com. Creator of Story Power TV, Transforming Grace TV, and Leading Leaders Podcast. Producer of 4 TV programs and podcasts for Liftable TV and World Trumpet Television, as well as multiple social media channels. Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
Have you ever been in that moment where somebody's talking to you, and when you're listening as closely as you can to catch some nugget of wisdom, some little piece of, wow, that's special, that's revelation, that's knowledge, that's insight that I didn't have before. And yet when they're done talking, you can see they're really impressed with themselves and it means absolutely nothing to you. There are 4 elements of great communication that I teach called Learn to Roar. And one of those is called relevant. We're going to talk about Learn to Roar in this episode of Leading Leaders, the special Story Power edition. So stay tuned so you can learn to roar.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.
John Maxwell mentions in his book, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect, a conversation where a lady sat down with 2 different world leaders. And when she was done with the meeting, they said, well, what did you think of those 2 different people? And she said, after speaking with one of them, I felt like he was the smartest person in the world. And after speaking with the other one, I felt like I was the smartest person in the world. What do you think made the difference between the 2 of them? Well, one of them may have been that they spent all their time regaling her with their own knowledge, their own wisdom, their own information. And if you've ever met someone who is very full of themselves and their own education, their own knowledge base, and they just can't help telling you everything they know, it would be like if you walked into the kitchen and you asked Granny, how do you make those biscuits so fluffy? How come your biscuits aren't like a brick? How come they're fluffy and mine are not? And Granny decided to answer your question by telling you what yeast is made from. Where does it come from? What does it do? Well, that would be wisdom imparted to you that answers the question that you're asking. If, on the other hand, she began to recite to you the dictionary, beginning with A, you might feel before you get to the Y, where the yeast is located, that you've given up on the answer to the question. You don't really expect to get an answer to the question you ask. In fact, everything that's been delivered up to this point has nothing to do with your question. It's not relevant. Now, trust me, we live in an information age, and relevant is kind of a key factor. There's so much information out there. And if you haven't noticed, a lot of our world leaders, especially politicians and bureaucrats, have become very adept at answering questions with information, but not relevant data. Oh, they have something to say. They have opinions. In fact, some of them are very, very expressive about their opinions. They're guaranteed to get your dander up. They want to make sure that you know that they are sincere about what they have to say. They're very emphatic and they're very passionate and they're very forthright. But nothing they had to say had anything to do with the question they were asked. If you think I'm kidding, just turn on C-SPAN on any given day and watch the people from the social media geniuses to the medical geniuses to the border geniuses that are brought in front of Congress. And Congress says, I'm curious about this. And they answer the question with that, a whole lot of that, but they're not going to talk about this. I'll give you all of that you want, but you're not getting any of this. I'm not going to answer your question at all. In fact, what I'm going to do is answer questions that have nothing to do with the question you asked. I'm going to fill the time so that you run out of time to ask me any more questions. You know this is happening with the congressman from both sides of the aisle. Say, I'm reclaiming my time. I'm reclaiming my time. I'm reclaiming my time. Why? Because the person who's answering the question has no intention of answering the question with relevant content or relevant information. Now, it's one thing to do that in front of a judge, in front of a courtroom, in front of an inquisitor of some sort. It's an entirely different thing to do that when you're on the platform, or you're leading a crowd, or you're leading a team. And you feel like, well, I just need to talk. I need to say something important. And it may be important to you, but not relevant to them. It's not actionable. They can't do anything with it. It doesn't apply to their job. Now, if I was in a crowd, I'd ask you to raise your hand if you've ever had a leader who filled your time with their eloquence. And when they were done talking, when they were done instructing, when they were done coaching, when they were done leading, you were no better off. In fact, at this point, all you have is more of your time gone. You still have things to get done. You still have expectations. You still have quotas to fill. But the time that you've surrendered for this leader to regale you with their wisdom is wasted time. You're going to get nothing back from it. It's not an investment in you. It's just blathering. If you're a leader, if you're a communicator, whether it's from the platform, it's over a virtual call, whether it's face-to-face in a coaching session or an employee review, if you have something to say, make it relevant. Not to you, but to the listener. Make it something that, well, they can do something with. They can take action on your call to action, and it will make sense. The talking that you do to them should be for them, not just for you. I remember my stepdad saying on a regular basis, am I talking just to hear myself speak? And I thought, most of the time, yeah. Most of the time you talk just to hear yourself speak because nobody else understands what you're saying. Now, the next level of roar, so the first R in roar is relevant. Be relevant. Talk about not what matters to you, but what matters to them, or in Dale Carnegie's words, speak in the person of, in the terms of the other person's interest. Speak in the terms of the other person's interest, not just your own. Don't take the mic, take the leadership, take the podium, take the platform just for the purpose of expressing what's important to you. Speak in the terms of the other person's interest. Make it relevant. The second is ownership. Ownership. If you've listened to someone speak for a period of time or lead for a period of time who they've never really lived through what they're telling you to live through, one of my rules as a leader is I'll never ask you to do what I haven't done myself. And I won't likely ask you to do something that I'm not willing to do right alongside you. If that's scrub the driveway or that's wash the windows on the outside of the building, there may be things that I'm too old and not agile enough to do anymore, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'm not going to ask you to do what I'm not willing to do. I might ask you to do what I'm not capable of doing. I might ask you to do what I'm not competent at doing because I know you can do it better than me. I will be very clear on that. But see, there's also this thing where people like to speak from a leadership position, from a professor type position, from a coach advisor type position, and not from a mentor's position. And those are distinctly different. If you don't know where you're going, ask someone who's been there. That's the best advice. That's the mentor's advice. Somebody who's been there and done that and didn't just get the t-shirt. Maybe they have some battle scars. Maybe they have some wins. Maybe they have some trophies and some plaques and certificates that say, been there, done that. But see, that's where ownership comes from. It comes from, I've walked through this trial myself. I'll never forget the first time I turned on a handline. A hand line is that's a fire hose. That's what they call the fire hose that you actually pull off the truck. It's not the snorkel on the roof or the turret on the bumper. It's the hose that you pull off the truck and a firefighter will go into the fire with it. The very first time I opened the nozzle on a charged hand line, it had about 100 pounds of pressure on the backside. And I was standing on solid ice. I had no idea how much pressure was going to come out of that hose. The instructor told me, lean forward a little bit. I leaned forward. And he said, now, don't open it fast. That creates a water hammer. You can blow up the pump in the truck. Open it slow and let the pressure come out. And so I opened it, and it started to trickle on the ground. And I thought, well, that's not so bad. He said, now, continue slowly opening it all the way up. Open it until it's all the way open. And I opened it until it was all the way open. And when it hit full bore and all of the water was coming out, I was being pushed backwards on the ground across the ice until I lost my footing. I kept leaning forward and finally I fell on my face on top of the nozzle and it was still pushing me across the ground. I tried to get up to my knees to advance the line. I couldn't get to my knees. I was on my knees trying to crawl on all fours with the hose tucked under my arm. It was everything I could do to move forward. I never actually did get the hose into the building until I turned off the line, then advanced it. And when I got in the line, in the building, then I turned it back on again because inside there was already a fire. The ice was being melted. Now, I can tell you what it's like to charge a hand line for the first time. I can tell you what it's like to go into a building where there's flame burning and it's lapping the ceiling and to use an indirect method of firefighting. I can tell you what I've studied in the fire course. I can tell you what it's like to drag a victim from a burning car. Been there, done that. It's my experience. It's not knowledge that I gained from reading a book or knowledge that I gained from watching a video. I've been there. I've done that. I've never been on the scene of a blevy. I've watched plenty of videos about it, from gas tanks and cars exploding in traffic accidents to rail cars that wiped out city blocks. There was nothing left but gravel and ash. But I've never experienced a blevy. I've seen the aftermath of tornadoes. When I was a kid, apparently lived through a couple. They blew right over our house, took the fence down, the TV antennas down, ripped holes in the roof. But I've never seen one up close and personal. Just videos. See, there are certain things in life that I have ownership of that I can speak from. And if you remember our last session on the Story Power Special series of Leading Leaders podcast, we talked about you've got to have the three E's to be able to tell a story. And the first one is earn the right to tell the story. If you haven't earned the right, you have no ownership, which means everything that you're delivering is somebody else's content. You might be quoting from somebody's book. That's okay. Give them credit. Otherwise, it's called plagiarism. You might be talking about what you observed in a video. That's okay. Give them credit and make sure your audience knows this is not my firsthand experience. Why is that important? Because I would say probably 50%, maybe more, of good storytelling is the emotional connection between the participant telling the story and the emotion of the story. That's what connects with the audience. If you don't have any ownership, you don't have any emotional investment. You've made no sacrifice to gain that knowledge and that experience. Maybe you watched it, maybe you read about it. But if you haven't been there, you have a different level of ownership. When you've actually been there, everything changes a little bit. And you know this is true because you see young people talk quite frequently about the value of communism or socialism. They haven't been in the ghettos and the gulags of communist societies. They haven't been on the streets of Cuba or Venezuela. They haven't seen what it was like in Stalin's Russia or Mao's China. Maybe they've read about it, but chances are they've only read about the utopian ideas. They've read about the Marxist ideas. They read about what it was going to be like when it was all perfected. They can even tell you the nations they believe have idyllically performed under these expectations. But they haven't been there. I've been to the Congo. I've met people with one arm. I can tell you why they have one arm. They told me the stories themselves. I've been to Cuba. I've been to Brazil. I've seen poverty. I've driven through the mountains of Honduras. I've seen people living in tents and thatches built out of privacy fence material, calling it a home, in the Congo and in Honduras and in Brazil. That's not the way the average American wants to live, but if you haven't been there, if you haven't seen it, if you don't own that information, if you haven't walked it firsthand, then the best you can recount is what you've seen in a video and hope that the lens was pointed in the right direction and not deceiving you. See, when you own that information, you have a different story to tell. Now, the next part of the roar is the A, that's the authority. It's one thing to say that I've been there and I've done that, but did you go? Did you learn? Did you win? What authority do you have to talk about what you're talking about? Now, maybe that's a granted authority. Maybe that's a certification. It's a training. It's experiential credibility in addition to credentials. It's one thing to say I have a master's degree and another thing to say I have a master's degree and I've spent 10 years in the field. It's always amazed me when I see these job applications and it says degree required. And if you read far enough, it'll say degree required in these five or six fields. But then almost all of them will say, or equivalent experience. Well, why do you think equivalent experience matters? Well, because sometimes you can learn more on the job than you can learn in a classroom. Sometimes it's more important to have done hands-on training, OJT, on-the-job training, than it is to have a degree in. And sometimes when you meet those people who have all of the authority of having done it so many years, they'll look at you and tell you what's in the book is wrong. Just straight up, what's in the book is wrong, because the people who wrote the book, they have the credentials, they don't have the credibility. Being in the military, it was pretty fascinating to watch people who would have that, they would have that butter bar on their shoulders, or maybe even the captain's bars. And they would be convinced, because I had my degree when I joined the military and therefore became an officer, I have the authority in this event, in this circumstance, in this situation. And it was pretty ironic, because you would see some of those guys, first-year lieutenants or just got their captain's bars, they get 5, 6, maybe 7 years in the military, and they run across a senior master sergeant who's been in the military, well, since they were in diapers, and has experienced these tragedies, these traumas, this dramatic learning curve for as long as these young men have been alive, or young women. And it's really fascinating when they come into this, well, I'm the authority on this. And he's, a lot of times the senior master sergeant would say, you may be the authority, but I'm the experienced one. So which one do you want to trust? You do it your way. Give me 5 minutes to get 100 yards from here before you do what you plan to do, because I'm telling you right now, it's a disaster. It's a disaster in the making. Well, this is what the book said. I don't care what the book says. The book can be wrong. Telling you what experience says. I've watched people do that 100 times. I was at an event just the other night. Nobody ever asked me as a firefighter to help with the starting of the fire. They tried for 15 minutes to start a fire off of a gas bottle into a fire pit, only to realize that the hose between the bottle and the pit had a hole in it, which means gas was escaping in the surrounding area around the outside of the pit, but not actually get into the jets of the pit. So if you accidentally struck a match somewhere outside the pit, you might actually light the bottle on fire and not the pit. They finally discovered that, and they gave up on the bottle, and they gave up on the hose, and they moved the bottle away, and they just burned wood, like a normal person would do. I've actually been at places where they set the bottle on fire, and there were flames coming out of the bottle, and they were terrified. How do we put this out? It's spewing gas out of a pressurized bottle. It could explode any moment. And it singed the hair on my arms, but I literally just walked over and turned off the bottle. And they all looked at me like, how could you know that? I don't know. Fire training? Been a firefighter? I mean, you can stand there and spray water on it all you want to. It's not going to go out. It's got a constant source of fuel. Authority. Wasn't about the fact that I wasn't the person in charge of that event. It wasn't about the fact that I didn't have the degree program to prove that I had been educated in that concept. It was about the fact that I've been there and done that. And so ownership and authority, they're kind of married together. Sometimes we think authority is the person with the title, the person with the position, the person in the front, the person on the platform has the authority, even if they're clueless. be cautious. As a leader, as a communicator, as the person at the front of the room, as the person with the microphone, that you don't presume that you have authority because you have opportunity. They're not always the same. Respect the authority, not of the position per se, but of the knowledge, of the wisdom, the experience married together with that authority that says, I've been there, I've done that, and I know what to do right. I know what to do differently. I know what to do instead. That's a powerful thing. When you communicate, be relevant. Know what you're talking about. Speak with authority. Take that position as you should, but only as you should. Don't presume authority that you don't have. And finally, be responsible. Maya Angelou says, people will forget what you told them. They'll even forget what you did. They'll never forget how you made them feel. Now, it's a very important understanding as a leader and as a communicator of what you're responsible for when it comes to other people's feelings, especially now when we live in a generation where feelings seem to outweigh common sense, feelings outweigh logic, feelings outweigh hundreds of years of biological truth, thousands of years. Since the dawn of human history, we've known what a male is versus a female. But today, feelings seem to be more important than that. How I feel today I feel like a kumquat. Tomorrow, perhaps, I don't know, I'll be a pineapple or an onion. But it's all about how I feel in the day, and it can change. That's not the kind of feelings that I'm talking about. Maya Angelou said, people will never forget how you made them feel. How you make them feel versus how they choose to feel, those are two totally different things. And the level of responsibility for the communicator goes directly back to what I said before. When you have ownership of a moment, of an instance, of an experience, of a learning event, when you have ownership of that because you've been there, you've done that, there's this connection to the emotion of that story that says, I know how it feels to walk through XYZ. The only son of a single mom, I know what it feels like to walk through divorce as a kid. Raised by a widow, I know what it feels like to be the only son of a single mom. Been there, done that, got the experience. I know what it means to be molested at 9 years old. I was. I know what it means to be an addict. I was. I know what it means to bring that drama garbage into a relationship because I've lived through it. I have ownership of that. And when I talk about those things passionately and emotionally, I don't have to conjure that up. I don't have to manufacture that. How I feel about that recounting is genuine, authentic emotion. Now, if I manipulated the emotion of the audience by telling that story in a way that was fabricated, embellished, modified just a little bit, just for the purpose of getting people to laugh or to cry when what I'm telling them isn't true, well, you might move that to the category of fiction, and fiction has its place. But as an authoritative leader, someone who intends to have influence in the life of others, fiction for comedy's sake is one thing. Fiction for manipulation's sake, that will destroy your credibility. That will minimize your influence. People will very quickly catch on to the fact that you will say whatever it takes to get them to respond the way you want them to, whether it's true or not. And at that moment, trust is gone. If you manipulate people's feelings, just remember, they will forget what you said. They'll probably even forget what you did. They will never forget how you made them feel. Most people are mature enough to say, I'm responsible for my own feelings, my own reactions, how I respond to something that's said or done in front of me. I'm a grown-up. I'm responsible for that. But if as a leader, as a communicator, you use emotional manipulation to get other people to do your bidding, to respond the way you want them to get them to follow your call to action, then you are manipulative, probably a narcissist, a horrible leader, and probably not a real strong communicator. If you have to duck to that level to get the results that you want, stop it. Learn to roar. Be relevant. Have ownership of the stuff that you talk about. Speak with authority that you've earned. and be responsible for how you make people feel. If you will apply those four rules and learn to tell better stories better, you will grow your influence exponentially very quickly. And if not, you will lose the level of influence that you have. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.